Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we have a program on singleness, cohabitation, and commitment in marriage. Our guest is Dr. Scott Stanley, and I know, Dad, that you respect this man highly. Tell us why that is.
Well, Ryan, there's some very good reasons for that. Dr. Stanley is academically qualified and clinically qualified. He has a PhD in marital commitment from the University of Denver, and he's a research professor who conducts studies on marriage and romantic relationships, and that's a subject rather interesting to me, too. I consider Dr. Stanley to be the nation's authority on this subject, and that's not said lightly. I really do believe that because of the things he's published and the influence that he's had on the institution of marriage. In fact, he just published a newly revised book, actually in 2014, and it's entitled A Lasting Promise, The Christian Guide to Fighting for Your Marriage. And I strongly recommend this. We're going to be talking a little bit about it in our program today. Now, I interviewed Dr. Stanley about 15 years ago, and I'm delighted to have him back. Mm-hmm. Scott, you are a good man. You're doing good work, and I have appreciated you through the years. In fact, I told you in my office a minute ago, it's absolutely true, that those early programs that we did together, I have re-aired over and over because they don't get old. Yeah. They're based on scientific data, but that tends to show the handiwork of God.
That's right.
You have continued with original research, and I'm really anxious to talk to you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me here.
I want to start with a word that you have coined. I'm not sure if this was original with you, but it sure makes sense, and it's called cohabitating.
Yeah, that's my word.
All right. It's obviously a play on the word cohabitation, but cohabitating makes it even more casual, doesn't it?
Absolutely. One of the things, you know, I do a lot of research on how commitment develops, and cohabitation now is a big part of the story and understanding what goes right and what goes wrong for couples. And just in the last 15 years, last 10 years, there's been even a dramatic change in cohabiting before marriage. So even 30 years ago or so, you know, people were more and more likely to cohabit before marriage. But what it's turned into recently is more part of the dating scene than even a premarital phenomena. So increasingly now, and studies show this, large sample studies across the U.S., a lot of people that move in together are not even likely to get married. So it used to be that was at least the understanding. We're moving in together and it's a step to marriage. And it no longer is. Hence, I've started to call it cohabitating in terms of what a lot of people do because it's really more the dating scene than even preparing for a life in marriage. It's astounding.
Dr. Scott, I think an important point to make, especially for our listeners, is you're talking findings and facts. It's not ideology. You know, you have colleagues that probably have never voted the same way you voted,
yeah.
And yet you're all agreeing on this data because it's coming from data. This is scientific research. I saw an article this morning that you sent us from the Wall Street Journal, and the subtitle is "Sociologists Fret That More Children Risk Losing Out on the Economic Benefits of Living in Married Households." It's bad for kids, and it's science that we're talking about. It's not necessarily ideology.
Yeah, and when you're talking about clear facts, you know, things that everybody can see is happening, people can see the change in how families form now. There are many more people than I've seen in my entire lifetime, from liberal to conservative, who, you know, they may not and often don't agree on the prescription, but they're increasingly really agreeing on the diagnosis and, and really seeing that these patterns have changed fundamentally in our lifetimes in powerful ways. And children is one of the greatest areas where this affects people, because one of the things that's very clear about cohabitation versus marriage is it's relatively ambiguous and, on average, pretty low in terms of commitment to a future together compared to marriage. Mm-hmm. But increasingly, and that's the point of the Wall Street Journal article that came out quoting a lot of really good scientists, children increasingly are being born to cohabiting couples, which means in actuality, more and more children are being born in what I call low commitment contexts. It's not judging anyone. It's just the reality that those relationships are, there's different estimates, but the 3 to 5 times less likely to continue together as a couple, say by the child's age 5, than a married couple.
Wow.
So it has dramatic impact and influence on the amount of instability that children.
And the divorce rate is so high. I mean, think about that. Divorce rate's probably around 50%.
Yep, it's still around 50%.
You know, above or below, a point or two, but about 50%. And you're saying that couples that live together have a 4 or 5 times greater risk of breaking up than even the 50% of average marriages.
But that finding, what's so stunning about it is that's really related to the couples having children. So it's not even just all cohabiting couples, which have become much more likely to break up than in the past.
So you have these convoluted families.
Yes.
Where there are a lot of half-siblings and people who have been married 1, 2, 3 times. And what are the implications of that? There just is not the commitment that would be the nuclear force that holds them together. So it's going to happen again.
What you see with cohabiting is a lot of couples do what we call slide into it. It's not even like a discussion or a decision about what are we doing, what does this mean. They just sort of, they're more and more sort of over at each other's place, and then they give up one of the places and now they're together. And now a lot of couples are having children in that context, but many of those couples still haven't clarified, do we have a future? Are we really planning to get married? Am I committed to you for life? But nevertheless, you know, here comes a child. And now this couple's relatively fragile because they haven't already clarified a future, but now they have a child. And that's that couple then that's, you know, 2 to 5 times maybe more likely to break up depending on whose estimate you're using. But those people, once they break up, they're going to go on to dating other people then. You know, they're going to maybe move in with other people. They're going to be in other relationships. And then there's maybe another child coming along. And one of the points that Sarah McClanahan makes, and she's a really important scientist in a lot of this area of what you call fragile families, is that children don't do well going through all these transitions of the romantic partners of their parents. Mm. You know, they're attaching to this person now, and then maybe that relationship lasts 9 months, and then they break up, and then there's another person coming along, and they attach to that person. And this is one of the things that I call this kind of the perfect storm in terms of where families are coming, because just as in society we've sort of dismantled some sort of common pathways that used to be widely accepted for how you form a family. So that's all broken down now. I think we've pretty much got to be raising the largest number of children in the history of the U.S. anyway, who are going to grow up with some insecurities about attachment, and they're going to have more difficulties themselves forming commitment.
Mm. You wrote an article that I have in front of me. This was several years ago, but it deals with what you were just referring to as sliding. And the title of the article is Sliding versus Deciding. Yeah. And I found this fascinating. I've read it about 4 or 5 times. Let me give for our listeners an illustration of what sliding and deciding are. And I shared this with you in my office a few minutes ago. Let's suppose we have a boy and a girl. They're sophomores in the university, and they're sexually involved. And finally, they just say, why don't we move in together? And they don't like dorm life, and they're paying money for that. Why can't we pool our resources, and we'll live together? And so they do. And then, of course, a baby often comes along. That's very different I don't know if it's morally different, but it's very different from my perspective and yours than deciding where people are committed to each other. They think they're going to get married, mm-hmm. and it's just a short time before that will happen. So they come into it with the expectation. Now, those are two different families.
Yes.
They are very different in how they see each other and how they see their relationship. And the outcome is very different. That's your point. Explain it.
That's exactly right. And you take that couple that moves out of the dorm, for example. Probably 60% of those couples like that, they will not have talked about what does this mean? Where is this going? Does this mean we're planning marriage? Does this mean we have a future together? But I think very often in those situations where people slide into living together, one of them's probably thinking this is the one. You know, and this, there's a lot of fear these days about marriage. There's a lot of fear these days about scaring your partner away. So very often that person's afraid to push that, afraid to bring it up, afraid to talk about it. So the slide sort of feels more convenient, you know, if I can just sort of angle this person toward more of a future together. The other could really just be thinking, well, it'd be great to kind of play house with you. It'd be great to be kind of sleeping with you every night.
Is there another assumption that may explain it here? The other partner may be afraid of marriage.
Yes.
He or she has seen their parents fight and fuss and divorce, mm-hmm. and they don't. I don't want to get into that mess.
Yep.
So I'll just play the game.
And I think there's a lot of that these days, and it gets to one of the things that I say a lot because I think it's really important, is one of the greatest changes in our lifetime for how people do relationships before marriage is ambiguity. Everything's ambiguous. And I think people these days feel and have been sort of trained by the culture now to feel like ambiguity is safe. And if you think about it, there's a fundamental reason why somebody would believe that, because I think we all sort of do know the more I actually say really clearly what I want and what I care about and what I fear here, the more you could actually hurt me by mm-hmm. rejecting that.
Yeah.
So if I put myself out there really clearly, I could get hurt worse. So I don't want to be that clear. I don't want to push it that clear. And here's where the sliding then becomes really risky for people. And this is, as you both know, this is the number one thing that me and my colleagues believe that people don't see about cohabitation until they're like pretty far into it, is when you move in with that person, sliding or deciding, and this will be why deciding is going to be preferential even if the person's going to, you know, live together before marriage. When you move in with that person, one of the things you're doing is you're making it harder to break up. Now, by the way, cohabiting relationships break up all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're increasingly more likely to break up than go to marriage. That's not the comparison, though, that I'm saying is the interesting one. The interesting one is that cohabiting is harder to break up compared to dating not cohabiting. So what I think happens is a lot of people increase the inertia, the energy for staying in this relationship or the constraints before there's any clarity between the two about a future together. And I think for some, what actually happens all the way down the line is they actually then even have a child with, and some people marry somebody they wouldn't have married if they hadn't have moved in with them, mm-hmm. but they got stuck.
And then you're lowering your quality of life in marriage. You're lowering your quality of life for your child in marriage. You're lowering what their standard for a good marriage is. Your kids are watching your marriage. You may not be that happy because you may have married the wrong person.
That's right.
But you're setting an example for the child. Again, it's the Wall Street Journal article that children are losing all of the benefits of a healthy, strong, committed relationship. It's the domino effect on down the line.
Yeah, so let me compare it, because this will allow me to amplify this sliding versus deciding point. Think about the transition to having a child or the transition to living together.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have actually very similar characteristic, although the child one's fundamentally, you know, even much bigger deal. But they both are things that after that transition, you have fewer options than you had before. You start living with somebody, it's harder to break up, you've lessened your options. You have a child, you've changed your future life options. Whenever you're potentially going to change your future life options, it matters a lot about whether you've made a clear commitment about being on that path before versus after that change.
Right.
A lot of people are finding themselves having to decide, am I committed or not to this after the thing's already happened?
Which is counterproductive to what they think they're doing. You know, we talked earlier about there's a lot of people afraid of marriage.
Yeah.
And increasingly, they're very open about it. Listen, my parents had a bad relationship, and I grew up in a household where they fought all the time, or it was that cold silence, that tension all the time, and I don't want that.
Make
in
it
our
clear life. Now you're yeah. not talking about your
mom. Definitely not. I had the exact opposite of that, mm-hmm. but there are so many people I know that had their parents had a bad marriage, or they got divorced, and it was ugly, and both tried to pit the kids against each other, and they're saying, I don't want that between us. I like you, or I love you, you know, so let's not do that. Let's move in together, when they're getting the opposite. They have a higher probability of breaking that off, of having hurt feelings, of going through those things, or marrying the wrong person, or having a kid, and you're putting a child in the exact same situation you were in. It's the opposite, and that's what the science and the data is showing.
I think that's exactly right. People are avoiding marriage because, and this is one of the big errors of this generation, is they see all of the downside is loaded up on marriage, and no downsides related to cohabitation. So they see cohabitation as costless mm-hmm. because they're not recognizing these very fundamental things, like it's going to make it harder to break up.
Right.
Or, you know, one of the clearest things empirically is serial cohabitation is just taken off, skyrocketed.
You got to elaborate on that.
So what that means is living together with more than one person before you get married.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, when they make that first slide, they're not thinking, well, this is probably the first of three people I'm going to live with, and I'm going to have a child with mm-hmm. one or two. They're not thinking that way. But for many of them, that's exactly the path that just got started.
And if there's no commitment in the relationship, what's to keep either partner or both from cheating? You're not really cheating because you haven't made any promises. You didn't stand at an altar and say, you know, I do.
Yes.
You are just playing it as it lies.
And in fact, there's a couple of studies that show that couples that are cohabiting are no less likely to be unfaithful than couples that are dating. It's just fundamentally different than marriage. And for the very reason that you said, and again, this isn't to put anybody down, but that's part of why people actually prefer cohabitation, because it is much more ambiguous about commitment.
Yeah.
And marriage is completely not ambiguous about commitment.
Dr. Stanley, you said two or three times now, I don't say this to put anybody down, but I know what you believe, and you believe this is a mistake.
This yes.
is wrong, but you're basing what you believe on what you have seen in the data and the results.
I think that's exactly right.
And you could also make a case for the fact that some things are right and some things are
wrong. Just to be clear, you know, I have a traditional viewpoint, and and you know, I'm a believer, and I do believe in right and wrong. But I also believe in terms of getting to this generation, they don't respond on this stuff. They don't respond well to being told this is right or wrong. They're all about explain to me why this
right.
would matter.
This helps because it says the things we've been teaching and preaching all along has scientific basis for all of this. And one of the reasons we're talking about it today is there's a lot of articles. Two or three times a year, a rash of articles comes out claiming that living together before you're married helps the success of your marriage. And you're saying that's not actually true, that if you fall into a very specific, rare category, you can potentially be on an even playing field with those that don't live together before they're married.
But in terms of risk.
In terms of risk. But there's a huge myth being purported saying, hey, you know, you got to try pants on before you buy them. And you wouldn't just, you know, buy pants and never try them on, you know, and then have one pair of pants for the rest of your life. I mean, it sounds so logical. And yet when it comes to the relationship, it's not true.
You said that. Exactly right. I think you nailed every point.
I'm pulling on my data from your work in these articles. So.
And people have to decide how they deal with the culture on these issues. But I mean, this is an important issue. So I have a strong biblical background, a strong background as a Christian, traditional. But having said that, your point about where the culture's at, most people don't actually share that viewpoint at this point. So many people are not in the same starting place about what you'd even say might be true or not. And so I think that's a dynamic that's out there. And then the other one that's really important that you commented on, Ryan, is they're hearing these other messages over and over and over again. And it seems very compelling to them. It seems so, for example, in terms of survey data, the highest percentage thing that people believe that will improve their chances in marriage is to live together first. In terms of what I've seen in survey data, that would be the highest thing you could get the most people to check off to say that's going to improve my chances of marriage.
Isn't that interesting?
And that's why it's increasing.
And that's why it's increasing. Yeah. And what's interesting is the literature's never really shown that. You know, so there's been all these nuances that come up in the literature now. It doesn't really show an advantage. That's why when you said that leveling of the risk a moment ago, you see, you had that just right. And that's – but that's, like you said, that's for a very, very narrow group. It's for the people – now I'm just speaking as a scientist.
Name them. What are the characteristics that if it's going to work – I don't think it really works for anybody.
But
if it's going to work, there are several characteristics that have to be there, which almost always are not.
Yeah, see, I think it's a risky proposition for everybody. But let me just say this as a total with my scientist cap on now. When you see the headline from social scientists that says there's no risk now for living together before marriage, that finding applies to those who only ever live with the person they marry, that one person, who only ever had sex with that one person that they marry, who lived together after they were already engaged. So that question about the future is already settled, and they don't have a child together before they got married. And usually they're a little older. That's actually, we're up to five or six now. Mm-hmm. That's a very select group. But most people just see the headline. Hey,
right.
No big deal, yeah. No risk. So I can go ahead and try this relationship on. And then if that doesn't work, I'll move on to the next one. I'll move in with the next one and test this. But that person's just greatly increased the risk of being on this high risk path of having a child from one or more people and living together with many people before marriage.
I have to be honest. When you say that the easiest thing for people to check off is the belief that living together before you get married increases your chance of a successful marriage. To me, that gives me hope because people are thinking about their marriages. Mm-hmm. They want more success in their marriages. They're just being given a lie. This isn't true. I know that a lot of people think that it's true, but the science and the data doesn't back it up. But at least they want a successful marriage.
I think that's right, and that's remained true. Most people want to be married. They want lasting love. Most people want till death do us part.
Mm-hmm.
But in their fear of marriage and their fear of making a bad choice, what people spend a lot of their time doing now in their 20s are things that actually make it less likely they'll achieve that goal.
Ryan, as you and I and Dr. Meg Meeker do these programs one after another, day by day, it's almost a truism to say at the end of the first program, we're not going to want to stop. But there's some that are even harder to stop than others. I have loved this conversation mm-hmm. with you because it is so relevant to so many young people. They are going to be hurt. And usually it's the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with
that. Yeah, she gets hurt. She's the most vulnerable. She's the mother. And there are all kinds of reasons.
Plenty of men get hurt, but women have a lot of risk.
But we are out of time.
Yeah.
Let's keep going, shall we? And we will let our listeners hear what we're about to record.
Terrific.
We've been talking to Dr. Scott Stanley, who's a psychologist. He's written many articles and done a lot of research. His newest book is actually newly revised. It's called A Lasting Promise, The Christian Guide to Fighting for Your Marriage. Get a copy of it. Scott, thank you for being here. Talk some more.
Thank you so much.
Well, I am excited to continue this program with Dr. Scott Stanley next time. It seems like couples who live together before marriage would have a better chance at having a successful marriage, but that's obviously not the case. And next time, we'll explore the problem with cohabitation in more detail. We've been listening to an interview with relationship expert Dr. Scott Stanley here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and you can find out more about Dr. Stanley and his work by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. But before we go today, I want to let all of you know that we are privileged to stand with you to serve families and to make resources available to strengthen homes and build family legacies of faith. As most of you are aware, this is only possible through the generous support and partnerships of some of our friends like you, and we don't take your gifts for granted. Currently, we're in the middle of trying to reach a $200,000 conditional match that ends at the end of April. This means that every gift we receive this month is matched dollar for dollar, and your support can make a real difference in the lives of twice as many families. As a thank you for your donation, we'll send you two of my dad's best resources, his new book, Your Legacy, and the DVD from our new film series, Building a Family Legacy. Thanks for standing with us on behalf of families today. Donate by calling us at 877-732-6825 or visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening, and for donating, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of The Problem with Cohabitation, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.